All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here. You're watching the Doug and Dave Intel Report. You can see here tiled to the right is Doug Thornton, my broadcast partner, former combat Marine, military contractor, DHS, current broadcaster of the American Vindicta Show. And we combine together many times on this forum to bring you the Doug and Dave Intel Report. And it's really becoming the dominant report because, honestly, we're putting out the best information. And we do have good guests that come on as well. But we have something that we're going to endeavor to do today. We're going to take what I think was the most important 7 minutes in mainstream media history with Tucker Carlson, in which he accused the CIA of being part of the Kennedy assassination, and put that forward on the air. Now, I have to say, his coverage, not Tucker's fault, but due to time constraints and so forth, was extremely superficial. And as I've been promising on other venues, we were going to come back and address some of these issues. Now, we're not going to turn this into a three-hour expose, which we could easily do. I mean, I could easily do 7-8 hours on this. I've done it before. But I wanted to take the viewer deeper than what Tucker did. And people are so, it's so wonderful, it's so wonderful. Yes, it was, but there's a hell of a lot more behind the scenes than what he said. So we're here. We have his recording. We'll stop it periodically. And Doug and I will comment on the content of what he's saying and try to take this to a deeper level. And this is in no way a criticism of Tucker Carlson. He had 7 minutes of space. That's what he gave. He did a great job. He has courage. He has guts. And he did something that should have been done 60 years ago. Okay. Doug, shall we play the opening of this? And then we'll go ahead and pause it. And I'll make some comments. You'll make some comments.
Sure will.
So not long after Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald on camera in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters, a lot of Americans started to have some questions about the Kennedy assassination. It was, you have to admit, a pretty extraordinary sequence of events. A lone gunman murders the president of the United States, and then, less than 48 hours later, that lone gunman is himself murdered by another lone gunman.
Okay, let's stop this for a second here. Okay, you see the pictures there. Oswald's a little obscured behind Doug and my tiled pictures, but you see Oswald on the right, and you see Jack Ruby on the left. They were connected by something called Operation Mongoose. Now, I'll go into that in more detail in just a minute, but I want to just say this about Oswald here. When Oswald was arrested and taken to Dallas Police Headquarters, he failed a paraffin test not once, but twice, which would indicate he didn't fire the 8 shots the Warren Commission said he fired, 3 at Kennedy and Connally and 5 at Officer Tippett in his getaway. What we know is this was not a random act with regard to Oswald being killed by Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby was a descendant of the Chicago Mafia. Giancani, been linked into the Kennedy assassination forever. Jack Ruby knew Lee Oswald. They hung out together. They were together, according to witnesses, in New Orleans. And this is where arms were procured for the Bay of Pigs invasion, of which both of these men played a role through Operation Mongoose. And Lee Oswald was at the Carousel Club on more than one occasion, according to people who've been interviewed by Nigel Turner, Bill Curtis. And the Carousel Club was a stripper club, a topless club. They ran drugs and prostitution out of there as well. And Oswald was frequently there with Ruby. And Ruby's explanation, well, I killed Oswald because I wanted to spare Mrs. Kennedy the pain of having a trial. That's the biggest crock of BS I ever heard. Later, Ruby, fearing for his life, requested to be taken to speak before the Warren Commission. And he said, I'll blow the lid off of this. I'll tell everything I know. And they asked him when he was being taken from court, Jack, were there powerful people involved in the Kennedy assassination? He goes, very powerful people. And he died under mysterious circumstances in the prison hospital. So the murder of the man on the left to the murder of the man on the right. Let's put it this way. These two men were no strangers. This is no coincidence. Tucker is exactly right. Ruby was sent in to wipe out the evidence. There could not be a trial because although I believe Oswald knew the assassination was coming, he was set up to be the patsy. And I think he'd figured that out as soon as the event happened. So, Doug, you got anything to add to that?
You know, this reminds me a lot of Jeffrey Epstein and the mysteriousness of how he died, supposedly died, and the ease and availability of cover-up here. And, you know, the thing that we really need to talk about is that the CIA had full acknowledged permission of everything intelligence-based with this operation. They were part of it. And here's my concern. My concern is what they were able to do to JFK, they can do to Donald Trump. And with today's media, Donald Trump will get a week, 2 weeks maybe, and it'll be pinned on whatever right wing, left wing, whatever they need to, honestly. And then it'll just kind of sputter out. And then they'll talk about the great achievements of Donald Trump. And even the left will come out and be a hero to him for a couple weeks. And, you know, they'll almost make him into a martyr. But you'll never have a Donald Trump again. Not saying he's the saving grace of America, but he's the best politician we can put forward right now. We need to try and to protect this man. But the willingness of the CIA to take down a president because the CIA was then threatened that they would lose their kingdom shows me that we have so many problems in this country. And during this point of time with the JFK assassination, you also have various operations going on from the CIA. You have Mongoose, you have Mockingbird. All right, Mockingbird was a big part of why you never heard of anything from JFK. Operation Mockingbird, obviously that's the CIA's entanglement with the mainstream media. You also have various psychological warfare gaming that's going on. You had the Monarch Project that was going on at the same time. MK Ultra was going on at the same time. I mean, what wasn't happening that the CIA didn't have their hands in at this point in time?
Well, they were a coordinating agency. You put your finger right on it. The CIA by itself might not have made the unilateral decision. I believe that decision came from the Rockefeller family. And here's why I say this, Doug. The day that John Kennedy died, the Rockefeller family won the lottery, the biggest lottery in the history of the world. JFK was not only not committing to action in Vietnam, he was actually the following year going to pull out the combat advisors, National Security Memorandums 223 and 224. This spit in the face of what the CIA and Rockefellers wanted because of the Golden Triangle and the massive heroin trafficking that was coming out of the region that the CIA wanted to manage. And they wanted a war to cover the operations. We know that they used to send heroin inside the dead bodies of GIs being shipped back to Andrews Air Force Base where they would be taken out. That's not in dispute. That's been proven. Also, too, the war was a cash cow for Bell Helicopter, owned directly in 1963 by the Rockefellers. 90% of the war contracts for Vietnam went through Chrysler Corporation as a middleman, and that was owned directly in 1963 by the Rockefeller family. Kennedy was also spitting in the face of the Federal Reserve, of which the Rockefellers controlled the New York Fed part of it. And that spit in the face was the gold, silver certificates that were being spread in competition to the Federal Reserve. It was really kind of the first Bitcoin, if you will, of its day, but it was not well accepted. The Rockefellers were the kingpin of oil industry, And Kennedy was opposed to the oil depletion allowance, which was a huge tax break, certainly just simply for looking for oil. Now, eventually they did get some of that, but they didn't get as much as they wanted. And I could go on and on with about 20 more examples. But the day that John Kennedy died, everything changed. Within 9 months, we had 100,000 ground troops in Southeast Asia. Heroin is flowing like crazy. The silver certificates went away. They got their oil depletion allowance reinstated fully. This is so clear what happened.
There's other cascading effects of this. The inner city violence spiked in a way that was dramatically never seen in America in our history. You also had the inner city gangs, especially from the black gangs, the Asian gangs, and then some other various affiliations where you had people that were literally being propped up by the CIA and to an extent by the FBI because they were pushing these narcotics and they were pushing this new fundamental radical idea, especially when we talk about the hippie generation. I mean, don't forget the Weatherman Underground started around this time. So this was a pivotal point in American history. And I think almost more importantly than the actual event happening itself was the cover up and the consistent blackout of the knowledge of who killed Kennedy, how did he die, and what else do you know about it? Bush never got it done.
Well, this is where you're right about the CIA. Let's put in the Bay of Pigs here.
Okay.
For discussion, okay? You had when the OSS was converted to the CIA in 1947, that's when this organization became totally rogue. And the Dulles brothers controlled the CIA. And Alan Dulles was a sacred cow of the intelligence community. He and his subordinate, Cabell, planned the Bay of Pigs invasion and then surprised Kennedy with it at the last minute, hoping to entrap him and giving air support for the invasion after the training of Cuban refugees. By the way, Oswald and Ruby were both part of this operation. They ran. Oswald was involved operationally, and Ruby was shipping guns along with his drug shipments. So when you look at the Bay of Pigs operation, Doug, what ends up coming out of this is that Kennedy said, I don't care how bad we look, we're not going to risk war with Russia. The destroyers sat silent off the coast of Cuba while the invasion was crushed and repulsed. And Dulles was furious, and Kennedy declared war on the CIA. This is where he signed his death warrant eventually. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He fired the director and deputy director of the CIA and said, we're going in a whole different direction. Well, just so happened, the man in charge of the evidence in the Warren Commission and the investigation of John Kennedy's death was Alan Dulles. Surprise, surprise.
Well, you know, you also have Operation Northwoods. And Operation Northwoods, CIA, DIA, and Joint Chiefs of Staff all had their hands in that. And I think one thing, and this is just my hypothesis by studying this case, is that I think the Joint Chiefs of Staff knew what was going to go on because the CIA and DOD, they play nice with each other, right? Around the same time, you also have the FBI's Operation COINTELPRO is happening, the counterintelligence operation upon 170,000+ Americans. So, you know, this was a huge pivotal point in American history. And what makes this so significant, Dave, is that it's repeating itself. This event right here.
That's why we have to talk about itself. It. Yeah, exactly. When Donald Trump was running in 2016, if you go back and look at the commonsenseshow.com website, I ran a series of articles on the similarities between Trump and Kennedy and the circumstances and how they paralleled each other. And I was very concerned that Trump would be assassinated at that time. Now that the left is on the verge of totally taking over the country with its Bolshevik communism, Trump is the only thing that stands in the way between that complete domination and America returning to what it was. This is why they referred criminal charges on Donald Trump out of the J6 commission. They will do anything to keep him from running. In my opinion, and I think you agree with me, he is a marked man. I want to say this too before we go on. I want to get this on the record. Lee Oswald did not shoot John Kennedy. And, you know, we could develop this and bring in the evidence, the forensic evidence and so forth. I just want to say that in terms of him shooting Kennedy, first of all, he did three shots in a time that was impossible. The Italian rifle is a bolt action. You have to reacquire the shot, the sight for shots two and three. That can't be done in 5.6 seconds. And we know how long the assassination took because of the Zapruder film. So that's number one. Number two, the angles that had to be explained when they discovered there was a missed shot and the companion of Sheriff Bucky Walters was struck in the cheek by a missed shot and they weren't counting on that. So they had to come up with this ridiculous magic bullet theory. And the bullet magically appeared on a stretcher at Parkland Hospital. It was absolutely a joke. Absolutely a joke. And there's never been a bullet like that in the history of the world. And the other thing is Oswald himself. When he was a Marine boot, he failed his marksmanship test twice. Had he failed a third time, they would have bounced him. Now, they had targeted him for intelligence operations. He was trained at a U-2 spy plane base. He was taught to speak Russian. And then later he defects to Russia as part of the American defector program, in which over 100 people would give the Soviets information pretending to be traitors in hopes of getting more information back. And then he marries the deputy director of the KGB while he's in Russia and brings her back, and our government pays for his way back. He was clearly an intelligence asset. In fact, when he was arrested, he had an ID card with his picture on it with the name Alex Heidel, Naval Intelligence. And that was the name of which he ordered the gun, mail order, that allegedly shot Kennedy, which it did not. And that gun was shipped from Chicago. And in 1963, there were no gun registration laws. He could have walked into any store and bought a gun, and no one would have been the wiser, but he created a path of which this gun could be traced back to him. This is why, Doug, I say he was set up to be the patsy.
Well, with the availability of firearms now, there's no question. And I mean, like, every type of firearm that you can think of, you know, is out there floating around on the streets right now, or sitting in people's, you know, closets in their house. We face now a threat against Donald Trump that is reminiscent to JFK, because Donald Trump wants to tear apart the FBI. So, and I'm sure the CIA right there along with it. And then you have guys like, you know, and as we play the video, you hear, you'll have guys like John Brennan, who is an absolute scoundrel. And then you have Pompeo. And all these CIA directors knew at some varying degree what really happened to JFK, and they never told anybody. Whose oath of allegiance do you actually have? Is it to the American people? Is it to the president? And I could get that if you had to differentiate between the American people and the president based off of security clearance matters. I get that, okay? But when your oath of allegiance lies to the CIA and not to the American people, not to the president based off of security clearance matters, we have a real problem. And that's the same problem with the FBI now. James Comey was ridiculed in Congress by Trey Gowdy because he would not give any information to black budget operations to the House Security Committee. And he said, you don't have the security clearance to get any of that information, and I'm not saying anything else after that. And our Congress said, then who are you? What access do you have? What power does the FBI have if they don't even have to tell Congress, who's supposed to hold them accountable, what to do? Well, that's the same thing with the CIA. So we have two very rogue agencies now that we can't control. We know the CIA was involved with JFK. We know now that the FBI has been involved in everything, to include setting up Donald Trump with January 6th, to include trying to destroy him on Twitter. I mean, when you have members of the CIA and the FBI, or, you know, a legal advisor team to Twitter, the biggest social media platform in the world, and they shadow banned, black banned Republicans, cost Donald Trump the election, supposedly cost him the election. We have a big problem. We have a very big problem. And they know for a fact Donald Trump gets the election. He's coming in. He's coming after these people with
both
every
barrels,
bit of power that he can.
Both barrels, yeah. Both yeah. barrels this time. No tippy-toeing in, trying to make peace with the other side, which nope. That was the mistake he made the first time he was president. You know, I want to also, too, satisfy people's curiosity in one other area, Doug, before we play a little more of this tape.
Okay.
Who actually did shoot John Kennedy? And I have really painstakingly gone through this on my website. So I don't feel the need to bring in extra evidence. I'll just say refer to the website, use the search engine, JFK assassination. But the man who fired the fatal headshot was Lucian Sarti. And he was a Corsican mafia hitman who frequently wore disguises. And this is according to his paymaster, who knew the details. And these details were given to reporter Steve Revelle and also Jim Mars, who was a very close friend of mine. And we know that Sarti was with a hit team on the grassy knoll. His spotter was wearing a railroad uniform because there's a railroad set up there behind the grassy knoll where the shot was fired from. We also know there was a hit team on top of the book depository. We don't know a lot about them, and we know there was a hit team behind, which explains the shot to the president from the rear. But Lucian Sarti was given the contract by a man named Christian David, who was running operations for the Corsican Mafia. And he was the part of the old French heroin connection, hello, hello, raising money for the CIA to fund black operations in Latin America, particularly in Cuba, planning the Bay of Pigs operation. And you start to see these connections, and the CIA frequently used the mafia in its intelligence operations. They started back in World War II protecting the docks of American ports from the Nazis, but then it grew to, since we couldn't take out Castro by the Bay of Pigs, we now have to use covert means, and they tried a couple of dozen assassinations using mafia hitmen. And the mafia were all too willing to cooperate because they wanted their casinos back in Havana. This was pre-Las Vegas, and the loss of Havana casinos actually leads to the rise of Vegas. But the mafia hitmen were very much a part of this operation and intertwined with the CIA. And so the CIA wanted plausible deniability. They didn't want direct American mafia involvement, too messy, too close to J. Edgar Hoover's mafia ties himself, in which they used to fix horse races for him. So they had to go abroad. And in 1963, if you needed white assassins in the American South, you either went to Rhodesia or you went to Marseille, France. And they went to Marseille, France. And that's how Lucian Sarti ended up there. We have Jim Mars, myself, and others have sourced this to the nth degree. What I'm telling you, folks, is the real killer of Kennedy. And he also used a hollow point bullet. And if you know your Kennedy assassination, you know that in the course of the autopsy, they lost the brain. They had to lose the brain because the Italian Kornikan Markiener rifle allegedly used by Oswald did not fire the dum-dum bullets, the hollow point bullets. Well, and this created such a massive hole in the president's head. In fact, actually, the doctors at Parkland, which were never interviewed by the Warren Commission, said you could take your fist and put it in the back of the president's head. Uh-oh, look at back and to the left. Entry, evulsed hole out the back, a quarter of the cerebellum missing, according to Dr. McClellan. Okay, and they never interviewed these doctors for the Warren Commission because it didn't give them the story they wanted, and that's because Sarti used a hollow point bullet.
Well, I just want to say that you don't just lose the president's brain.
You think? Well, listen to this one. You heard of Lieutenant Pitzer? Lieutenant Pitzer was in charge of photography and doing all these things with the Kennedy assassination, and it was a month before his retirement. And he told his colleagues, I'm going to go on the Tonight Show one day, and I'm going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. There was so much fraud that I uncovered when I was taking pictures, blah, 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 blah. They lost the brain. They did. And here's how Pitzer died. He committed suicide by shooting himself in the head with his right hand, but he was left-handed, and his ring finger was so mangled that they had to cut the wedding ring off his finger. I mean, this is how this stuff was dealt with. This was CIA.
Well, and there's another variable. It was the Secret Service. The Secret Service at one point had to have been instructed on breaking its own protocol with the president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're right about that. Yeah. You're exactly right. The Secret Service was answering to General LeMay at the time, Joint Chiefs, chief planner of the Bay of Pigs operation, along with Alan Dulles.
Once again.
See, these aren't coincidences, Doug. These aren't coincidences.
No, the coordinating effort here is hierarchy. Hierarchy within the Joint Chiefs of Staff, so Department of Defense, and then you have the Secret Service, and then you have the FBI, and then also the CIA. All right. These are all issues that have come up since Donald Trump was president.
Yes.
All the same agencies. I remember watching a Secret Service special agent supervisor in charge with the presidential detail who said she wouldn't jump in front of a bullet for Donald Trump. Now, if she openly says that, there are many others who probably think that along the bullpen as well. We have a major malfunction in America when it comes to our internal security and our external security. And they have, for the most part, and when I say they, I mean they at the top, have sold themselves out. But it's been a generational problem. Look, if this was only a 60s and 70s problem, and then it leavened itself out, okay, let's really investigate what happened there. But this carried on. And has never stopped. Never stopped.
Yeah, your instincts are. See, I can tell you're a crime scene investigator, Doug, because your instincts on this are right on the money. Let me give you just a couple of facts here to whet your appetite. In 1963, my uncle had a tool and die store on Main Street. That was supposed to be the route that the president's motorcade was going to take. Minimum speed, about 40 miles an hour. He did not get the word. They changed the parade route 3 days before. So he calls my aunt, and my uncle did not like John Kennedy. And he said, gee, I wonder, Edna, if someone shot the SOB. And he didn't know it had already happened. He was absolutely stunned. And this was like within 3 or 4 minutes of the assassination. So I got a little family history going on there. The parade route was published in the newspaper, which it wasn't supposed to be. And then they published the change. The Dallas police chief's last name was Cabell. He was the brother of the deputy director of the CIA who was fired by Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs, Cabell. Same name, same family. They changed the parade route that broke every Secret Service protocol. Rather than going down Main Street, they had him turn on to Houston and on to Elm. And when he went around the book depository building approaching the grassy knoll where the fatal headshot was fired, the president's motorcade was going 14 miles an hour. That's illegal under Secret Service protocols. Also, if you look at Dealey Plaza that day, there's windows open everywhere. And it's been standard operating procedure for the Secret Service since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln to do a walkthrough. And people are warned, you do not open these windows. You won't like what comes back at you. But that was not done. The president was also placed in the lead car, which is never, never done in a motorcade. That's a violation of Secret Service protocols. And then, of course, they took the guards off the side of the vehicle. Now, the mainstream media likes to lie and said it was Kennedy's suggestion. I don't care if it was Jackie's suggestion. Secret Service protocol overrides a presidential wish. And those agents should have been on there. And they were not there doing their job. In fact, they were out partying the night before. The agents in the trail car behind the president were at the, guess what? Jack Ruby's Carousel Club partying the night before. I kid you not. Too many witnesses have testified to this. So I could go on and on. The 119th National Guard Regiment out of San Antonio was supposed to be on the grassy knoll that day to provide extra security, because it was only a few weeks before that Adlai Stevenson was chased down the street by people who were opposed to civil rights legislation. And this is in Dallas. and Dallas should have been considered to be a hostile city because of the civil rights stands of John Kennedy and his brother Bobby, but yet no precautions were taken. General LeMay canceled the 119th Regiment that would have provided extra security. And it's just, I could go on and on and on, Doug, with this, but you're absolutely right. The Secret Service protection was 100% compromised. And in the assassinations manual for Latin America in the 1960s, Fletcher Prouty actually brought this forward. He read passages from this classified document, and he said, this is how they killed John Kennedy. And they said, you compromise the protection for the person who is your target, and here's how you do it. And it matched up point by point by point with everything I just said. They followed the CIA manual for assassinations. Let's go ahead and play a little more of the clip. I can't hear, Doug. We have to back that up.
They're not entirely natural events.
Okay, that's a good starting point.
I suspect these are not entirely natural events. But, replied the U.S. government, they are. This bizarre chain of killings was all entirely natural. So less than a year after the JFK assassination, the Johnson White House released something called the Warren Commission Report. And the report concluded that while their motives remained unclear, both Lee Oswald and Jack Ruby had acted alone. No one helped them. There was no conspiracy of any kind. Case closed. Time to move on. And many Americans did move on. At the time, they had no idea how shoddy and corrupt the Warren Commission was. It would be nearly 50 years before the CIA admitted under duress that, in fact, it had withheld information from investigators about its relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald. But even then, at the time, before that was known, the government's explanation didn't seem entirely plausible, and some people started asking obvious questions about it. It was at that point, as Americans started to doubt the official story, that the term conspiracy theory entered our lexicon. As Professor Lance DeHaven Smith points out in his book on this subject, the term conspiracy theory did not exist as a phrase in everyday American conversation before 1964. In 1964, the year the Warren Commission issued its report, the New York Times published five stories in which conspiracy theory appeared. Now, today, of course, the term conspiracy theory appears in pretty much every New York Times story about American politics. It's wielded, now as then, as a weapon against anyone who asks questions the government doesn't feel like answering. But despite 60 years of name-calling, those questions have not disappeared. In fact, they have multiplied with time. And here's one of them. In April of 1964, a psychiatrist called Louis Joylin West visited Jack Ruby in his isolation cell in a Dallas jail. According to West's written assessment, he found that Jack Ruby was, quote, technically insane and in need of immediate psychiatric hospitalization.
Okay, so here's my question. Was Jack Ruby crazy?
No.
How was Jack Ruby a successful businessman and insane?
He wasn't. Jack Ruby was a highly successful mafia entrepreneur. Highly successful. He was one of the kingpins in Dallas. He was sent by, originally came out of the Al Capone family, but Giancani assigned him to the Dallas territory to solidify Chicago profits. So he was very successful. He went and got women at the carousel in New Orleans and brought them back to the Carousel Club. And people say, why would he do that? He could simply go to Dallas and get women there. There were plenty of women. Well, he was helping to run guns for the Bay of Pigs. There's an address there that's really important in New Orleans. It's called 545 Camp Street. And it's kind of a two-edged building. It sits on two streets with two front doors. And this is where Guy Bannister, ex-FBI director for Chicago, was running guns for the Bay of Pigs operation. They would receive them there, and they'd send them out to Lake Pontchartrain Springs, Louisiana, to train the Cuban refugees. David Ferry, who recruited Lee Oswald into the Marine Corps and then into Operation Mongoose, was the chief trainer for this. Oswald was not a stranger to this site. Jack Ruby helped to facilitate the gun deliveries to 545 Camp Street. And there was an interesting encounter that ties Oswald into all of this. Oswald was arrested outside 545 Camp Street when he was protesting American involvement in Latin America. He started a committee of one person called the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. And he had on his literature 545 Camp Street. It was a mistake. And Oswald accidentally identified 545 Camp Street as being part of what he was doing. He should not have used that address. It was clearly a mistake. But he was protesting against intervention into Cuba in front of the building where they were running arms to invade Cuba. That's not a coincidence. It's the same exact address, 545 Camp Street. Oswald was an intelligence operative. And this is what I want to stress to people. He was part of Operation Mongoose that was set up by Bobby Kennedy to assassinate Fidel Castro. What Bobby Kennedy realized after the assassination, they used my plan to kill my brother. And that's exactly what they did. And Oswald was selected to become the patsy. Ruby, who was also part of the operation, was selected to wipe out Oswald. And they probably told Ruby, people have asked me this, how would they get Ruby to go along with this? Well, first of all, in the mafia, you don't refuse assignments. But secondly, they probably told him the sympathy will be so much with you that you killed the man who allegedly killed Kennedy that you'll get off. Well, he didn't get off. He got sentenced to a death sentence, but he died before they could carry out the sentence. So this whole thing is so easy to debunk. And I want to make one other point, Doug, before I throw it back to you. Everyone talks about Warren Commission, Warren Commission, Warren Commission. You know, it's ridiculous. The Warren Commission is not the final report from the government on the Kennedy assassination. The Warren Commission gets trumped in 1976 by something called the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And they reinvestigated the Kennedy assassination based on the public pressure they were getting from constituents. And what they came across was a Dallas police motorcycle whose radio was stuck in the on position at the time the assassination occurred. And they had acoustic and forensic experts come in, and they said there clearly were two different guns firing from two different directions when Kennedy was killed. So the conclusion of the government in its final report is that John Kennedy was killed by two assassins, one likely from the grassy knoll, the other likely from the book depository area. Now, they did name Lee Oswald as the likely suspect at the book depository, which I don't agree with, but they did mention two assassins. So here we have all these years, the Warren Commission is put out there as the only investigation, and that's a lie. They're hoping that America is so ignorant that they won't know the real story.
Well, right now, with the way American politics are and the American people are, I mean, thanks to the cell phone, we will forget whatever happens in the future with the repeat of this event within a moderate amount of time that they could take successful advantage of. And and they know it. You know, this is the perfect time for these storms to come back. And everything's building to this. Everything's building to this. And let me tell you why. The migration, the world war, you know, the pandemics, plandemics. Then you also have the dying off of the American currency. China is going to most likely take over as the world currency here fairly soon, within the next 10 years. All of this is going to be well taken advantage of. Well planned. It's been well planned, and it's being completely exposed. And the elite don't care, because the American people don't have the ability, with all the evidence that we can put out on the internet. The elite don't care, because there's nothing that you, the American people, can do against the federal government, but Donald Trump could, and that's why they're afraid of that man. That's why they roast him every chance they get. That's why they make him out to be this, you know, complete obnoxious idiot, this sexual pervert, and all this other crazy stuff. It's to completely demoralize him and his associates, so that when something happens to him, there'll be so many different guests You know, it could have been this guy, could have been this organization, could have been the Oath Keepers, could have been Antifa, could have been Black Lives Matter or the Russians or Pelosi's gang. The amount of enemies right now for Donald Trump and the MAGA movement is limitless.
You're right about that.
If you silence Donald Trump with a bullet, you silence everyone else who would come after him.
Well, let's put it this way. In a perfect world, this is not going to happen, folks. So if you're thinking this is going to happen, you're hoping for something that never will be. But if Donald Trump were ever to become president again, they'll kill him before they let that happen. But if he were to become president again, he would destroy the FBI and rebuild it into a reputable agency. He would do the same with the CIA. They will fight for their lives. They already killed a president for survival. The CIA, that was the CIA's buy-in to this. But the thing that you look at here is Donald Trump doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell. He started off by thinking, I want to create a legacy in 2015. America's become, as he called, quote, a shithole. And he wanted to resurrect the shithole, which he did to a large extent. And he began to see himself as the new George Washington of America. His ego takes over. He's a man of tremendous ego. And now he's locked into a battle for his life. His life is at stake right now. I don't think he bargained for this in 2015. He thought he was going to be the hero of America, not fully understanding the politics of what he was dealing with. You have to understand, we live in a country right now where the left controls everything. They control the military. They control the media. They control the schools. They control the universities. They control everything. And Donald Trump is swimming upstream against all of this, as the rest of us are too. 70% of our country is estimated to be center-right, yet we're being ruled by Bolshevik communists. And we're being ruled through election theft, media manipulation, the programs you mentioned, Doug, the mind control programs that work on the public. That's exactly right.
But well, that's why you hear so much. That's why you hear so much commentary now about rebellion, about civil war, about joining, militias to fight against a tyrannical government, even though there's a lot of validity. And all these
not going to happen.
It's not going to happen because no one can control a hellfire missile from a drone at 30,000 feet.
No, it's not just that.
And nobody wants that.
The military would have to support the people, and under the present Pentagon leadership, that's not going to happen.
That's definitely not going to happen. I mean, your current military was willing to sell itself out to China before all this other stuff happened. Most likely that probably started with Clinton. During Clinton that we invited China onto the world stage and become a part of the world economic structure. And that's when a lot of monies were transported back and forth between big business people and politics, and people started getting bought off. And I think with a lot of the downfall that's happening with America, China has a lot to do with it. The communists have a lot to do with it. We think the Russians all the time. And trust me, Russia and China are like this, right? You can't divide one from the other anymore.
I know.
But China is involved in whatever will happen next if Russia was involved in the JFK assassination.
Well, there is one ray of hope, but it doesn't lie in America. Brazil's military has sided against Dominion voting machines, China manipulation of these machines, and outright election fraud. And Brazil sits on the edge of a civil war. Peru recognized this is what happened in a corrupt election, and they've already impeached their communist leader. And then you've got Argentina that's teetering. Cristina Fernandez, vice president, former president, and her husband, the president, they're under extreme duress right now from the military for the same reasons. The difference between Central America and their people rising up and taking control of their countries and it happening here is this. It's psychological. In Central America, no one trusts their government. They have a long history of coup d'etats, so people know that what's happening today won't necessarily be true to tomorrow. Americans are lulled into a false sense of security that we're simply living through a trend, something that will come and go. Biden is a bore. His BS will pass. And that's not the case. We have been taken over, folks, and we don't have the mechanism to overthrow it because Milley and the rest of the Joint Chiefs are on the side of the communists. But in Brazil, these people live for today. When they see corruption today, they stand up for it. Americans have become passive because they trust the system that no longer exists. And this is the main difference between America. I just went through this with Sam Arnold, our Latin American expert, and we're both in agreement. The psychological differences between the average American and the average person in South America are light years apart. And it explains why we're passive in accepting what's happening to us, because we think it's going to change on its own. And in South America, they know unless they make a change, it won't change. There will be civil war, regional civil war in South America. You can count on that, but you'll also see Chinese intervention. They're involved in all three countries.
That's right, to include Venezuela, which is something that's not talked about anymore.
Yeah, that's true. But Venezuela is so far off the map in terms of being controlled by the communists. That's why I didn't include them. The battles that are taking place right now are in four countries. I would have to add Chile to the three I've already mentioned.
What about Argentina?
Well, Argentina is one of these countries, yes. Argentina is going through allegations of voter fraud. Just, Cristina Fernandez has already been the vice president. She has already been convicted and sentenced to house arrest for her crimes. They're trying to link it to her husband. Ultimately, behind it, the goal of the Argentinian people is to get rid of these communists so they can return to normalcy, because they had a pretty good leader two presidents ago, and that's what they're trying to get back to. But see, the people in South America, they take the bull by the horns. You know, Cristina Fernandez was almost assassinated. If it wasn't for a gun misfiring, she'd be dead. These people in South America don't mess around. They're willing to go to jail for their beliefs. They're willing to die for their beliefs. We can't even get people to write a congressman in this country.
I've wrote a couple of my congressmen, and I've never got a response back.
Doesn't matter. The fact that you're writing, they gauge it by the number. You could literally have a million Americans send the same email every single day, and the system isn't geared to decipher the individual words unless they decide to show interest because they're getting so much email. But they measure the volume, the volume. And they have AI that scans it to kind of give you the emotional feel for it. That's how they gauge it. That's why letter writing is really effective. See, but you never hear the media talk about that, do you? But these congressmen do this. Which way is the wind blowing? And that email is the main thing that they look at. And then they have to balance that versus their campaign donations. Let's play the rest of this clip.
All right.
Puzzlingly, no one who had spoken to Jack Ruby previously had reached. Ruby had seemed perfectly sane to the people who knew him. Louis Joylin West pronounced him crazy. But what West did not say was that he was working for the CIA.
That's true.
West was a contract psychiatrist for the spy agency. He was also an expert on mind control and a prominent player in the now infamous MKUltra program, in which the CIA gave powerful psychiatric drugs to Americans without their knowledge.
Home run, Tucker.
All the psychiatrists in the world, what in the world was this guy doing in Jack Ruby's prison cell?
Stop it for a second. I want to answer his question because he won't answer it. I don't know that he has the answer. I do know the answer. Jolly West, his name was, nickname was Jolly, went by Jolly West. He made his name by working with tortured American POWs after the Korean War. Sleep deprivation was the primary way. He became a sleep deprivation expert. And then the military grabbed him. He went to Fort Bragg, then Fort Meade, and he developed all these PSYOP programs on behalf of the CIA. He was very much a part of MKUltra. Tucker is right about that. But the thing is why would they send him to see Jack Ruby? Because they tried to get you're guilty by reason of insanity, lock you up, never hear from you again, keep you drugged and medicated for the rest of your life. We don't really want to kill anybody else because it's people start asking questions when the trail of deaths occur. So this was their way of trying to get Ruby out of the way without killing him. Unfortunately, the judge in the case would not commit Ruby and commanded him to stand trial.
Well, so
yeah, that's the one thing that Tucker doesn't cover here.
If you read the modus operandi, which I have, and I am like, I have all the white paper documents of it. I've done all the investigations on my show for it. When you really investigate MK Ultra and how the CIA used these various different psychotic drugs, what was it that they called psychodrugs or something? Their methodology of using overdosed people with LSD and then seeing how far they can push that person till they mentally fracture.
Or go to Manchurian candidate status. They went two ways on that.
Yeah, and that's part of the fracturing. But also, it's not hard to slip in just a little bit too much of a dosage and, oh, poor guy, his heart gave out. You know, it's easy. Read the documents. See how they assassinated people all around the world. They would overdose our own American soldiers all the time. And once again, I've covered this so much, I've almost forgotten half of what I learned. But the CIA knew how to issue what drugs from what part of the world that they would go and grab these drugs to get various different benefits out of them, I guess you could say. And with the Manchurian candidates, Sirhan, and a couple of these other guys, you know, you have to really, you got to understand that. And me and you have broken this down before with active shooters. Active shooters are being fed the same type of drugs that the CIA went and explored the world for, financed, and then honed. And then gave it to pharmaceutical companies. Here, poison the world. We use this against POWs. We use this against traitors. We experimented on our own people in Fort Meade, Maryland. I mean, and so now you have this guy, Jolly. He comes there. This is what would have happened. What would have happened is he would have ended up prescribing the medication to this guy, and he probably would have overdosed. He would have had screaming fits or become a mental zombie.
I think he'd have been a zombie. I think that was the plan. Let me tell you what happened after this. Because they did not get the confinement, the mental health confinement for Jack Ruby, this opened it up for investigation. And there at the time was a lady by the name of Dorothy Kilgallen. This is really an interesting story that doesn't get enough attention. Dorothy Kilgallen was on America's favorite game show on Sunday nights called Who Do You Trust? And she was a columnist for the New York Post, a prominent columnist, I mean, famous. And she had celebrity status. She comes home one day and her producer is waiting for her. And she said, "Are you still going to investigate this Kennedy thing?" And she says, "Oh, I'm going to Dallas tomorrow." He goes, "What do you mean?" She goes, "I'm going to Dallas tomorrow. I'm talking to Ruby, and I'm going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. The stuff I've got is incredible." She died that night the same way Marilyn Monroe died. So they had to kill her to keep her from getting to Ruby to telling the story. This is what they were trying to head off with Jolly West. And I got to believe Tucker knows this because there's a reason why he stuck Jolly West in here. So I look at this and I'm going, yeah, this he knows more than what he's saying in these 7 minutes. But that was really an interesting tale with Dorothy Kilgallen. Did you know Jim Mars did this research for Oliver Stone for the movie JFK? And Jim found over 360 unnatural deaths connected to the Kennedy assassination.
Sounds like the Clinton Foundation.
Very similar approaches. Oh, yeah. A lot of the guys who were connected to the Bay of Pigs, like David Ferry, all these other operatives, they all ended up dialing violent deaths. They wiped out Operation Mongoose. You know, there's something else that should be mentioned here, too. This is how bad the Secret Service was in November of 1963. John Kennedy was scheduled to go to Miami. And this was about 10 days prior to the assassination in Dallas. And just by pure accident, and Nigel Turner had this on tape in his series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy. He interviewed Peltier, the detective I'm going to talk about, He played the tape. So the Miami Police Department is investigating a gun runner. And they recording everything. And the recording was played by Nigel Turner on his show. The detective is interviewing the person of interest. And he says, well, how many of these guns do you have? He goes, well, we got this many and we can do this, this, that, and the other. And he said, it's the same gun they're going to use to kill Kennedy in 3 days. What? It's the same gun they're going to use to kill Kennedy. So the Miami Police Department did the responsible thing. They contact the Secret Service, and Kennedy, and by the way, he said in the recording, this mafia figure said, they're going to kill him with riflemen from tall buildings. And Kennedy was scheduled to come in on his limousine, just like in Dallas. So what they did is they helicoptered him into his appearance. Now, here's what's just bizarre, Doug. This is just what's bizarre. You just stopped a recorded threat against the president, a direct threat with the official participation of detectives of the Miami Police Department. And so this is on the record that this is real. And what do they do 10 days after Miami? They put him in the same situation he was going to be in Miami.
Absolute disregard of a threat.
Exactly. And this, to me, was so egregious. There's another factor, too, that people don't talk about. Kennedy was okay to a point, and he was going to do away, as I mentioned earlier, with the combat advisors in Vietnam in 1964. By Christmas of 64, all American personnel were to be out. The Diem brothers, who were running South Vietnam, did not want American troops, and for good reason. The Vietnamese people had been occupied by the Japanese. They had been a French colony forever, and they defeated the French at Dien Bien Phu. They did not want another apparent colonial power, and it would have been political suicide for political leadership in South Vietnam to say, yeah, we're just going to bring in another colonial power. And the people would have said, no, we're not going to do that. And the fact the American presence was there, which helped led to the rise of the Viet Cong in the South. So the Diem brothers came out and said, no, no, we're not, we don't want American troops. We thank you for your training. We thank you for your weapons. And John Kennedy even gave an interview to Walter Cronkite about 2 weeks before his death. And he said, ultimately, it's the Vietnamese war to win. We can give them assistance, but we can't fight the war for them. Okay. Well, in the first week of November, the Diem brothers were murdered by the CIA. That is not in dispute. And the CIA used the excuse the Diem brothers were losing the confidence of the South Vietnamese people because they were corrupt. Whether they were corrupt or not did not matter. They got rid of the Diem brothers and replaced them with people who wanted American intervention. 2 weeks after the Diems were killed, John Kennedy was assassinated. 9 months later, we have 100,000 troops in Vietnam.
Let me ask you a question before we go back on this. Do you find it interesting that when Jack Ruby reached through the Secret Service and police line and killed Oswald with that .38, do you find it interesting the angle of the camera, how it was perfectly positioned to capture the entire thing?
It was choreographed.
On national television like it was completely choreographed. You couldn't have been luckier.
You're absolutely right. And here's the other thing I used to say, too. Jack Ruby, known to the Dallas police as being mafia, drug runner. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And they let him in when they're moving the president's accused assassin. Who the hell were they keeping out? I mean, the fact that he even got in there is suspect. And the Warren Commission never asked that question. That's just what's absolutely incredible about that. Is they never asked the question, how did Ruby get in there?
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
You know, I mean, to get into these courts, you know, there are other ways besides just parading someone up the front steps. Typically, you can go through the judge's entrance. I've been in plenty of courts. You can go through the judge's entrance, an underground entrance. You can go through back doorways where law enforcement brings prisoners back and forth from. But everything was done well choreographed. And once again, this is what they do. They made the issue of everything that happened to JFK disappear, and now everyone's going to talk about the assassination of Oswald. And that's how they do it. Like, to an extent, it almost seems like there's someone who was working in Hollywood who was helping write these scripts.
This was choreographed. Like I said, Oswald had to be the patsy, and then Ruby had to be the cover. They could never allow a trial for obvious reasons. Let me give you two things I contributed to this. The best researcher for Kennedy, unquestionably, sorry, folks, if you're pissed off if I say this, there's many good researchers, but my friend Jim Mars was the best. But I was able, through my trials and tribulations, I was doing about 30 radio interviews a year by the late 90s, and I had actually developed a little bit of a following this way because I listened to Jim. I went out and did my own research, and I started being on the radio. And this is before my involvement in the media. My first radio show was in 2007. My first real article in what I do now was about 2004. So I was actually into this before. This is kind of where I cut my teeth in the media, because it was unacceptable for me that these men who killed Kennedy got away with it. And so I made it a mission. It was my hobby. And a couple of things I was able to discover through the times. At a school district I was teaching, and before I started teaching at college, university level and stuff, I would teach some of this history to my history class, and then it expanded to, gee, you need to teach the school. No, you need to teach in other places. And it kind of grew. And I'm speaking to a group one time, and I'm talking about Ruby killing Oswald, but Oswald almost survived. Okay, now this fact was not known when I reported it. Dr. Crenshaw is the man who will actually operate on Lee Oswald, and his nurse is in there. And I had the nurse's grandson in one of my classes. And I don't have permission to use his name, so I'm going to be a little obscure on this point. But Jim actually interviewed the nurse after I brought the facts to him. And he came to me the next day and says, yeah, I told my grandmother what you were talking about. And she said, he's right on the money. She said, we know that they wanted to murder Oswald. And he said, well, how do you know? And she said, well, on speakerphone, Dr. Crenshaw got a phone call from Lyndon Johnson, who's now the new president. And he said, this is Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president of the United States. I want a deathbed confession from the accused assassin. And the phone went dead. And she said, Crenshaw looked at her and said, well, I guess they've decided the outcome, haven't they? Because they thought they had a 50-50 chance of saving him, but although he'd lost a lot of blood. And what's interesting is Crenshaw never went public, and neither did the nurse. They never went public until I brought this to Jim Mars. And so I told Jim, this is what I know. This is how you contact the lady. She now lives in Sun City, Arizona, not living in Dallas. She lives in Sun City. And I said, this is how you contact her. And sure enough, he jumped into this case. Now, what's interesting is about 3 years later, Crenshaw decides, after all this time, now this is 30 years after the assassination, Crenshaw decides that he's going to go public. And he made his revelation on the Geraldo Rivera show. And but he did so after Jim went and interviewed the nurse I identified for him. And there was one more case that I had a hand in. Again, another student. And this student says, my great uncle would like to talk to you. And I said, oh, what about? And he said, Kennedy. He knows things, but he's really kind of hesitant to speak, and he wants to know if you'll keep everything privileged. And I said, I will. And so I talked to him, and he was part of a team that worked on the limousine. The limousine you see in the National Archives is not the presidential limousine. It's been completely redone. And he was part of this team. He would come in, and he and his fellow workers, they would change into airplane mechanic suits, and they would be searched. Body cavity search, everything coming in, leaving. They were told, you've signed national security oath, whatever, and you'll go to jail forever and a day if you ever talk about this. And they were just body workers. I mean, they were just working on the car. But he said the security was extraordinary. But there were missed shots that this man said he saw initially on the limousine. He said, there weren't the three shots the Warren Commission said. He said, we found at least four missed shots. And that was kind of interesting. So I put him in contact with Jim, but he wouldn't go public. He was afraid the government would come after him and so forth. But Jim also had someone else on the record that said the same thing who had worked at the same place.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my minor contribution to this. People need to understand, I was obsessed with this for 30 years. That's why I can sit here and still quote chapter and verse without even looking at notes. It's because I worked on this so hard. Well, and what people don't understand, Doug, and I think this is really to the point of our presentation today, is that if the CIA wants to cover it up, they can cover it up no matter how sloppy they've been. Well, the Kennedy assassination is filled with holes that you can tear apart, but the official narrative still stands today.
Well, let me try and throw a slider across home base here.
Okay.
So Jack Ruby, if you remember, he was defended by Melvin Belli, who was most likely a mafia attorney from California, right?
He was.
And he argued that Jack Ruby had had a effect of, what is it called? Psychometer epilepsy. And psychometer epilepsy, all right? And that had caused Ruby to black out and subconsciously shoot Oswald. And then when he woke up, he was telling everybody, you know me, I'm Jack Ruby, as the police are, you know, fighting him to the ground. Well, I want to read from WebMD what psychometer epilepsy is. And you tell me if this makes any sense. Okay, so next to tonic-clonic seizures, psychometer, which is complex focal seizures, are the most common form of all epileptic seizures, except in infancy, where they are seen rarely. Differently from generalized non-convulsive seizures like petite malabsence, their first appearance has no typical age limit. However, their proportion to other forms of seizures increases in adolescents and adults, especially between the third and fifth decade of life. The main symptom is the disorder of consciousness, which lasts at least more than half a minute, normally several minutes, and completely distinct seizures, which doesn't begin abruptly and which often ends ill-defined. This twilight attack is preceded by an aurora of sensory, psychic, and vegetative character. The aurora is followed either by a transitory state of immobility, so a paralyzation, and later by motor phenomena, or at once by motor phenomena in the form of diverse automatisms of variable intensity. So that means spastic movements of the arms and legs and jerking movements, right? And then it goes on to say that reaching from mild movements in the oral region, which is, you know, the strange noises that people can make whenever they're in an epileptic seizure, and verbal expressions to highly dramatic scenes, often accompanied by a vegetative symptom. Tonic versive and tonic symmetrical or tonic asymmetrical seizure symptoms are quite often motor variants, which also can lead to sudden drops.
Jolly West. That's what you're getting into here.
Psychometer attacks can be reduced to pseudo absences. However, they can be developed into tonic-clonic seizures. And generally, the succession of seizure symptoms is constant in the same patient. So,
you know, they needed this to go away. You're right. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Right off the bat, this guy, a mob lawyer, flies in from California and tells the judge, well, he needs leniency in the judgment because he's dealing with psychometer epilepsy. And nobody in that entire courtroom had any idea what psychometer epilepsy was. So this lawyer got to fabricate a story of what it really was. But none of the symptoms matched the behavior. None of the symptoms matched the behavior. Watch the video. Whenever Jack Ruby lunges forward and shoots at Oswald, he's then grabbed, taken to the ground. Hey, I'm Jack Ruby. You guys know who I am. Where was the epilepsy? Where was the seizure? Where was the vegetative state? Where was the sporadic movement or the oral sporadic movement? You know, where were all the symptoms? But that's what he was defined. And then ergo, jolly. They were coached as to say this.
The jolly thing that comes into play. And the fact that Tucker linked jolly to this cell. You know, I think Tucker's planting a seed here. And here's what I mean by planting a seed, Doug. I think he's planting a seed with Jolly West, knowing that someone like you and I might come back with something like you just did.
You just got to know. You got to know what they did in MK Ultra, and I studied
You got it. But I will tell you this too, and this has to be a consideration as well. They wanted to bury, as I said, Ruby into a deep, dark mental health cell where they keep him drugged up forever and a day. You wouldn't even have to kill him. You wouldn't have to arouse suspicion. The man was just mentally ill. Okay, but here's what also happened. We know that Trafficante and Carla of the Toronto Mafia brought in the Corsican Mafia hitmen. We know that. We know Carlos Marcello received them in Mexico, and his agents transported them across the Mexican border, where they worked in advance of the assassination for 2 weeks at Dealey Plaza before the announced change in the parade route that I mentioned earlier. And we know that Marcello was part of this. Gianconi was a coordinating agent for Dallas using Jack Ruby. Well, okay, here's what happens. Carlos Marcello, all these men are dead within 6 months. Carlos Marcello is assassinated. Gianconi answers the door in Chicago, has his head blown off. Jack Ruby, as we know, dies under mysterious circumstances in the prison hospital. All of these mafia figures disappear. The originator of the contract, Christian David, ends up going into a French prison voluntarily, where he willingly admitted to the murder of a French police officer so he could get 24/7 protection. He knew he was a marked man. This came out in Steve Revelle's report. And then Steve Revelle actually found the paymaster for the Corsican Mafia in South America, and he agreed to an interview, but the interview was really obscured. And he said, everybody else is dead. I got to be careful. And he originally paid the assassins in assassins were originally paid in heroin, French connection, French heroin mafia, you know, that from Marseille. So that makes sense. But he converted the heroin from the mafia into dollars. And he was the paymaster. And he had all the details. He knew that Sartee used a hollow point bullet. He knew Sartee was wearing the Dallas police uniform. In fact, folks, if you want to look this up, first of all, you can go to my website and look it up. But also, too, you can go to anywhere on the net and put in badge man photo, Dallas assassination. And you'll see the colorized fourth generation version produced by Gary Mack, who worked for Eastman Kodak at the time. Then he became a curator of the sixth floor depository, which was turned into a shrine, and he changed his tune. Gary Mack was a great researcher. If it wasn't for Gary Mack taking the Marianne Mormon photo that was taken within a sixth of a second of the killing of Kennedy, he blew this up four generations to colorize it, and we have a Dallas police badge emblem. We have the badge. We have the gun. We have Gordon Arnold, who saw the whole thing, who was a military man who was filming. And he encountered Sartee. And in fact, Nigel Turner actually got that interview on tape before Gary Mack, Arnold died. We have all these facts that connect together. And all these men in the mafia that you're talking about here, they all end up dead. They had to make them disappear. So the fact that they used an exotic mind control strategy to try to silence Ruby makes a great deal of sense to me.
Yeah, it does me too, because who is going to say that they weren't doing it? Because you couldn't ever pull the CIA into Congress at this point in time and talk about it. You know, and even so, they're not going to tell you. You don't have the authorization.
So if people say, Hodges and Thornton, particularly the Hodges crazy character, here's the thing I say to you people. If you want the proof for what I'm saying, here it is 60 years later, and the cover-up continues. They still are refusing to release all the documents, despite a congressional order from 1992 to do so.
I mean, They will tell you everything about Donald Trump's life. They're about to release his tax records to the public. I mean, who cares? But they'll literally tell you, if you become an enemy of the state, they will dig up every skeleton in the closet and they'll parade it around, but you won't find anything about this. And it's because it's the most damning evidence that links the real elites of America. Somewhere along this route, somebody of high rank signed a signature. I authorize this operation.
That I can tell you who did it. I know who did that. It was Curtis LeMay, one of the Joint Chiefs who was running the Secret Service. They needed his cooperation. He had the mafia contacts because of the Bay of Pigs and the attempted assassination of Castro following that, using mafia agents. It was Curtis LeMay. He doesn't get the credit he deserves for being one of the brain children. Now, he wasn't the only one. This was a multifaceted, compartmentalized operation, but he deserves a lot of credit. You know what we have here? Donald Trump, folks, is in trouble. And I think we need to do another show following up on this. And we need to complete Tucker's presentation. And we need to bring in more commentary. But we need to do so in the guise of the exposure of the plan to assassinate Trump will happen if they can't take him out legally. They can't bring in digital currency and all the other crap they want to do as long as Trump's in the picture. And I also think they're going to expand this to DeSantis. I think DeSantis' life is ultimately in danger as well. So what do you say, Doug, we do a part two on this?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. On that note, folks, hey, we've gone way over time, but welcome to Real American History. Real American History.
Oh, by the way,
and I'll dedicate my part of it to the late Jim Mars, who was a dear friend of mine, a mentor, and one of the best researchers, if not the best I ever knew.
By the way, make sure you go to Rumble and you subscribe for the Doug and Dave Intel Report.
Good job.
In Rumble.
Almost forgot about that. Yeah, that's
this will be the
point.
This will be the second video uploaded into it. We had probably our first actual heated conversation. That'll be the first video that's already there, which was a great conversation.
You know why I like that, though, Doug? First of all, that's not going to come between our friendship. But the reason I like that is because people know that we're not BSing them. We're honestly giving our real impressions. And then sometimes we won't necessarily agree with each other, and that's okay. Unlike the Democrats, we can tolerate difference.
And that's what makes this journalism great, is that we can throw together various different, ideas and views and, also experiences over time, and we can make a great show out of it. No one else is doing what we're doing and exposing what we're exposing. And that's why the Common Sense Show is now in the top five for suggested podcasts, and Joe Rogan's number one. So, the Common Sense Show is doing something correct. And what I ask everyone to do is make sure that you subscribe to the Rumble account. We're not going to be on YouTube. YouTube censors way too hard, and we talk about way too much, I guess you could say, sensitive content for their poor little hearts. But make sure that you go to thecommonsenseshow.com, that you subscribe for there, and you also sign up for thecommonsenseshow.tv.
Yeah, that's very good. Okay, well, my best to your wife and your new son. Congratulations
on
the birth.
Thank you.
And so Doug is a proud papa now. He has enough for a basketball team. Oh, I know. It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. And, Doug looks tough, and he is. But the tough one in that family is his wife. She came through a tough delivery with flying colors. So great job, Amy. Doug, look forward to doing this. Let's try to line this up and get this done within 24 hours, because people are going to be clamoring for it.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Take care. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.